Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Soul Sister Radio. Soul Sister Radio.
Welcome to Soul Sister Wednesday, and this is Maria DiGiovanni, and we are launching a brand new show here on Soul Sister Radio, and it is called Brame.biz. And this is where if you are married to a law enforcement officer, or if you are a family member, or if you are an officer yourself and you need to speak up about something that we don't normally speak up about in the world, we're going to do it here. And today we are going to speak to Mr. Paul Hubbell. And, sir, I am excited to have you here. I will explain a little bit more about our show, but I'm kind of want to get you on real quick. And Paul is a former Chicago cop, currently a licensed private investigator doing criminal defense work. And he is an investigative TV news producer and documentary filmmaker. So, Paul, welcome so much to our show today. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. It's pronounced Hubel.
Hubel.
Yeah. That's okay.
And I even asked you before we went on live.
I know. Those things happen all the time. Don't worry about it. Anyway, this is a very interesting topic that you have, and I guess I could probably begin by giving you a little background on law enforcement officer screening, because this is really where it all begins, if that would work.
Okay, perfect. Before we start, let me go ahead and just explain to our audience, because I haven't, who I am a little bit, and so you will also know, because, again, this is unscripted, and we are both learning about each other and seeing how we both can help our officers get the attention that they need on post-traumatic stress disorder and to keep our families healthy and safe when it comes to law enforcement. My name, my legal name, is Maria Brame. I will spell that for you. Bravo, Romeo, Alpha, Michael, Echo, Maria Brame. I got married to law enforcement in 1985, and I was with law enforcement for 20 years, the total of my life. I was married to two officers, because when you are married to a law enforcement officer and you are in a domestic violence situation, really, who do you call? 911? In my case, not so much, because I knew most of the officers coming to the door were his friends, and it was not a very good situation for me to call. So, and at that particular time, I really didn't know anybody else who was married to law enforcement that was having the issues that I was having. So I immediately got married to a second law enforcement officer, and lo and behold, I was never going to speak on officer involved again, and then my name was written all over it in the year 2003 when Crystal Judson Brame was killed by her chief of police officer of Tacoma, Washington, David Brame. And lo and behold, the Crystal Judson Brame Police Protocol Program was created under the Domestic Violence Act for Women. And so there's $187 million with this cause written all over it, and that happened to have my name on it, Brame, since that was still my legal last name, and her story and my story were very, very similar, except for my voice made it through. So here we are today, and we are going to talk about law enforcement officer-involved domestic sexual abuse. And not to bring a pointing fingers on you're the bad guy, but really to raise awareness and promote education on a subject that we really need to understand. We need to help our public servants as much as we can. They truly are our angels out there. So, Paul, I'm excited for you to help me. As you know, the reason why I got a hold of you is because one of our advocate warriors on our end, Susan Murphy Milano, passed away 2.5 weeks ago. And she truly did help me. And she was the one that caused me to be able to stay silent on this subject, because whenever I had a woman who was in need, I simply gave her to Susan and knew that she was in good hands. So, Paul, I want to welcome you to the show. Thank you so much. I really would like to know first about your experience as a cop, especially in Chicago.
Well, Chicago is a pretty diverse place, and I wound up in probably one of the more interesting districts, which is Monroe Street on the Near West Side. It encompassed African-American ghetto, the Italian neighborhood, the Italian village. It also was where Greektown is and what we call Jewtown, Maxwell Street area. It also has probably the busiest trauma center in the Midwest, Cook County Hospital, that's receiving gunshot victims sometimes within minutes of each other. It's a violent district, but it's an interesting district, and it's truly diverse. And working there was a pleasure. Probably the best thing I enjoyed about it is it had great restaurants. I don't care what you wanted to have that night.
Exactly, especially, wow, you had it all there. Whatever ethnic food you wanted to eat, you had it there. How was the Italian food there?
Oh, Taylor Street is to die for. And when I go back, it's one of the first places I head.
Very good, because now you're on the West Coast now. How do you like it better compared to Chicago?
The United States has got interesting places. I spend a lot of time in Phoenix, Arizona. I spend time in Los Angeles. I spend time in Chicago. And I also visit Europe, and I occasionally will go to India. So I just kind of like it all. I take it all in. And just about every place has some kind of a disadvantage. But I enjoy my travels. I enjoy what I do now because I never really know what kind of an adventure I'm going to be assigned to.
And it's so much different than law enforcement work. How long were you an officer?
I was an officer for 12 years.
Okay.
And then I opened up my detective agency in Phoenix, Arizona. I started out doing a lot of fraud work, but I wound up in criminal defense and death penalty cases, horrible cases. And then I essentially expanded to L.A. They were going to make a movie about one of my cases starring Brian Dennehy. However, at the last minute, the film company, Scripps Howard Productions, decided they wanted to stop making movies. Of course, I got paid, but nothing ever really came of it. But I started acting, I started writing, and hopefully I can get a couple other projects off the ground. But in the meantime, God only knows. I mean, I did a documentary with a Swiss filmmaker that we previewed at the Human Rights Film Festival in Geneva about a year ago, and it was quite an experience. So, like I said, I really don't know what hat I'm going to be wearing. I've just been doing this stuff for a very long time. I think all told, I have about, God, I hate to admit it, it gives away my age, 42 years.
Right.
In one capacity or another, usually something investigative. But anyway, I would like to let's talk about where cops come from and how they're screened.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Because if I can just stop you for a second, because this is really important, because the chief of police of Tacoma, Washington, David Brame, he did not pass his psych tests. So it's really important that we understand what it is that you're going to share with us, because there's a lot of old-time cops that didn't pass the psychological tests. So that's the question that I want to ask you, too. So thank you for letting me interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. In the old days, they just kind of flew by the seat of their pants. A candidate would come in. Generally, you'd have to have a squeaky clean background. No history of any kind of drug abuse or whatnot, no crimes, and then he would get hired. But then all of the great brains came in, and they decided that they needed to psychologically screen the officers, and I think that it really got worse instead of better.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, there's a paradox. It's a huge paradox. When you're looking to hire a policeman, you have to find somebody who is psychologically suited to go out and aggressively use physical force to take someone into custody. And if you have someone that is too aggressive, you want to eliminate him. And if you have somebody that's passive, that just won't do it, or will do it namby-pamby, you've got to reject him too. So when you're walking the tightrope, to pick the perfect candidate, you kind of err on the side of aggressiveness to a certain extent. Now, the other, and I consider it a huge problem, and that is the EEOC guidelines that demand that police departments hire minorities, African Americans, Hispanics, and people who come from different cultural backgrounds. And I'll talk about women in a minute, but let's stick with men right now.
Okay.
In order to get a representative group of African Americans and Hispanics on the departments, they have had to lower standards all the way around. And unfortunately, the biggest breach that I saw that brought problems was being forgiving of past criminal behavior. And let's say a person had a lot of arrests, or when I say a lot of arrests, I'm talking about minor arrests, disorderly conducts, assaults, marijuana possession, things like that. They decided that it's a cultural thing, and to eliminate people for those reasons would be discriminatory. So
wow.
They turned around. They wind up hiring petty criminals that really use bad judgment and can't control their behavior. And so in the last 30 years, the selection process with all the great brains has deteriorated significantly. And they then try to weed them out in police academy settings, and that doesn't work too well, especially when they're looking at manpower shortages and they need to get warm bodies out on the street.
Right.
The paradox is has been really too difficult to deal with. Now, the next thing is you get hired as a policeman. Your heart is maybe in the right place. You want to do the right things. You want to help people. But you're really put through the ringer. They abuse you in the police academy. They want to get you, toughen you up for the street. And they are insulting in every way they can be sometimes, just to see how you're going to react and how you're going to deal with it. Then you hit the street and you start having to make an arrest. And when I say have to make the arrest, that's really what it boils down to. A person will put you in a position where you really can't do anything else but arrest them, particularly for these disorderly conduct type offenses. They just want to go to jail. So you have to take them, and then they want to go down with a fight. And the last words out of their mouth is, you know, I'm going to have your badge. And you're told this over and over and over again. And if I had to take my little Chicago police star and cut off a little piece for everybody that said that, it would be like in 10,000 pieces.
Right.
But, you know, it's just, so anyway, this abuse, and then you get knocked around, you get threatened and sometimes terrorized. And when that happens, it takes its toll.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a soldier in combat, you start having irrational fear sometimes, and you have to cover it up. You really have to cover it up, and you go, why am I afraid in this situation? What's going on? And there's things that you don't understand. Now, the moment that you go through something that I'll call an aberration, you might want to go to a counselor. But the minute that you go to the counselor, they take away your gun, they take away your credentials, and they put you on the rubber gun squad, and you become a pariah.
Right.
You're no use to the department, and everybody is looking for a way to get rid of you. And it's a career ender. So seeking help is almost out of the question.
Exactly.
Unless you're very lucky that you can have somebody that will treat you privately and not blow the whistle and make it difficult. And then the other thing is, so all the cops that run into this, because they're not getting any help, they have to find a mechanism to treat themselves. And that's a disaster. You know, a doctor who has who is his own patient is a fool, and you really can't do that. You need something and somewhere to go, and God forbid you talk about depression. And when it comes to suicides, cops are way at the top of the list of occupations, and it's frightening. And what it does is it deprives families of probably somebody they need the most. They need a strong father, and a strong father put the gun in his mouth, and he went on and on. Now, domestic violence, I just want to get this straight, is not limited to cops, not by any stretch.
It's not.
And everybody thinks that the gun is what makes the domestic violence possible. And the fact of the matter is that most murders in the house are committed with the common kitchen knife. And horrible things happen that don't involve guns. Spouses run each other over with their automobiles. They do so many reprehensible things to each other, and things that probably should be avoided. And you know, there's that old song, "You only hurt the one you love." But that really boils down to something. Nobody in the world knows how to get your goat and aggravate you and make you angrier than a spouse, because they know you and they know what will trigger an emotional response. So it's more than the cop that needs the counseling. It is also the spouse that has to recognize, and it's usually a she, but not always. A lot of times it's reversed. But the spouse that's getting the abuse has got to realize, are they doing something? Are they triggering things unnecessarily? And sometimes they are, and sometimes they don't even recognize it. And that could be a contributing factor. But one thing is for sure, I don't see how there can ever be a solution to this. The only thing I've considered is a law enforcement officer should be able to go to the city that he is employed by, or the county or the state, and say, I need to switch jobs. And then he should get preference where he gets a position that pays as well, has good responsibility, that is not law enforcement, and he can do so without going through to the very bottom and start working his way up.
Right.
In other words, he just gets the job, and then that abuse that he takes on the street doesn't come home at night. Because trust me, when you can get enough abuse in the daytime, and I was married for 27 years, I never laid a hand on my wife. It never entered my mind, but we did have some sharp, insulting conversations back and forth. And it usually, she had a pretty difficult temper for me, and I really didn't care for the temper. It wasn't that she was mad at me, it's just that she was mad. And I had enough to go through in the daytime, and I just didn't want to go through it at night. And so the relationship ended. It ended on a high note. I mean, we get along better today than we ever did. And we look out for each other. And someday we're going to be old enough, maybe, where we're going to have to really, one of us is going to have to take care of the other. And, you know, maybe we have to reconcile, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. And, you know, I don't want to go through the temperament thing again, but it's something that happens, and marriages deteriorate. And the other thing is, cops are lousy spouses. I mean, we have opportunities all the time for extra sexual activity. And, you know, there's for policemen, we seem to have badge monies that love us for our uniform and will indulge us in whatever fantasy we want. And, of course, that's a gateway to hell in any marriage. You know, you have to kind of fight off the temptation. And frankly, it's not the easiest thing to do, especially when some of these gals are young and fun. And then, of course, police women, that's a whole different matter. They have a lot of the same problems in their marriages. But there are still fewer police women. And are they involved in adulterous relationships? Yes. With their partners? Yes. And, you know, I mean, I'm going to say that sex is no stranger these days to police vehicles.
Right.
Between the officers riding around in them. And, you know, it's one more thing. I mean, a police partnership has broken up a lot of marriages. And I'm going to tell you, when you're the wife, your husband comes home, he smells like somebody's perfume, or worse, and you know what those signs are, and you know he's been fooling around, and it has got to drive a lot of wives over the edge. And then the screaming starts, and then horrible things take over, and then, God forbid, you put alcohol in the mix, and I've never been a drinker, but if you put alcohol in this mix, or if, God forbid, drugs, you can imagine where these things will deteriorate to.
Well, so, I posted something today that I've had for a very long time, and I have not shared it. And it's a picture, and the first picture is of a cop pointing a gun. It says police on the top, tactical training. The next one, police combat tactics, volume one. Another picture is of a victim laying on the ground in blood. The next picture is of a whole bunch of rifles, and then the last picture is of AI that's been black and blue. On the picture, it says, law enforcement, technical training, and the culture of weapons are dangerous with anger, alcohol, and depression. It's been interesting listening to you, Paul, talk about the whole dynamics of being a cop and your perspective. I was weeping as you first started because the way that they train you in the academy is, as you were sharing what they do to beef you guys up, so to speak, I couldn't help but be triggered that is exactly the treatment that a lot of us wives don't talk about. And trust me when I tell you, Paul, it doesn't matter whether or not you laid a hand on your wife or not. Truly, every physical scar has an emotional one behind it. And that life and death rests in the power of the tongue. And as you know, those words can kill much more.
Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, really, there were so many times when he would say to me, I could just, you know, effing kill you right now. And it got to a point where don't tell me, just do it. Okay. Because the words are killing me. The action, I'll be dead and happy because I'll be in heaven, but your words are killing me.
Wow.
So, and then we may not hit our kids, but those words, because we're trained that way, right? And especially, again, we're absolutely right. I'm the wife and I'm half Hispanic, half Italian. I'm passionate, Paul.
Yeah.
So you get that in the middle of alcohol, those weapons, and the tactics that you guys just have to learn to survive out there. And then when I had to listen to you share that it's you're absolutely right, and I lived what it was that you were speaking. There's nowhere for you guys to go, no place, because you're right. If you guys call out for help, then that makes you weak and less than, and then, wow, it puts a label on you that you don't want to do. So instead of putting that label on you, the departments take you off the road for a certain amount of time to clear out your envelope in order for you to be the good guy back on the street. So with all that you've shared, with your experiences, with my experiences, with those women out there that are silent, and they will remain silent, because it's a double-edged sword being married to a cop. Truly, it's a double-edged sword, because there's so much good, and then there's so much that we don't talk about that's bad. So, Paul, how I'm going to play a song and take a break for a minute. And this song, when I play it, I really, really hear, and I can remember going to so many officers' funerals. And thinking to myself, my dear God, if everybody understood what it was that they do out there every day when you put your armor on, meaning that vest, that you know, gun belt, you're truly, truly, truly knocking on heaven's door.
Thank you.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Soul Sister Radio.
We are back with Paul and Maria DiGiovanni here on Soul Sister Wednesday, and we are talking about law enforcement and how amazing they are and how amazing they cannot be at some times. So, Paul, again, thank you so much for joining us. And again, when I played that song, it truly takes me back to where you triggered me to. And it was an interesting time. You were involved with law enforcement for 12 years and I was involved with law enforcement for 20. And it's just amazing to hear you speak. It really is triggering me, but in a good way. We've got a lot of children out there that are children of cops that we want to make sure that are in a safe place and grow up, because we don't want our children to see our husbands and their fathers put guns in their mouths. Because you're right, we have a huge problem when it comes to suicide. And officer-involved suicide murders are very, very common when it comes to this. Usually the officer will kill his wife, kill the children, and kill himself. Very rarely does he take out, just himself. But that is a huge thing as well. And I need to look at the statistics on that, Paul. Do you know what the statistics are?
I'm going to say this. The number of officers that kill their family is actually minuscule. Usually they kill themselves.
I got to beg to differ with you. So let's do some investigation on that, because
I'm basing it on my own experience. And I mean, I know like one police woman that she was going through some bad stuff with a divorce and child custody. She puts the gun in her mouth on the steps of the school after dropping her son off. I've had cops that were friends of mine that have had failed relationships with women, particularly. It's almost like there's always a woman involved somewhere. And they will wind up killing themselves because the relationship ended. They will kill themselves at an alarming rate, but there are still those that have killed their wife and then themselves, or maybe shot the wife, she survives, but he kills himself, and combinations thereof. But really the amount of officers that kill their families over suicides, simple suicides, are different. And again, I go over 42 years and I've been to so many funerals. And of course, as a private detective, I do criminal defense work, and a lot of my clients are cops that wind up on the wrong side of the law. So, I mean, I'm really, when I say this, it's based on experience. I haven't looked at the statistics, but I would be shocked if it was, let's say, not six suicides for one officer that kills his wife or members of his family.
I'm going to say it's 2-1. Okay. I would love to see, because that's my side. You're used to the perspective of just the officer and taking care of just the officer. And I'm used to the perspective of the wife and the kids and the family members that can't do anything about it. I live in that environment. I speak to these people every day. So I really want to know, that's a really good question, and I'm going to put it out for both of us to find out the answer.
I think my answer is a little more correct than yours, but, you know, I think we both need to know that statistic for sure. Now, the other thing, too, that I want to stress, and this is, because I've probably served as a private investigator maybe 7,000 orders of protection, if you know what those are.
Yes, I do.
And serving those, I've had one wife that was, I served her husband, and 4 days later he kidnapped her and murdered her. Another one, I served this fellow, and he went to his wife's dental office where she was a dental hygienist and shot three people in the office, including her. The dentist, however, even though he was shot, was able to disarm the husband, and he was captured. And I'm so familiar with those cases, and I've got to tell you, out of 7,000 or so orders of protection that I personally served, and then one guy shot himself as I was leaving. I heard the gunshot because he was so upset he got served. I've been on the inside of those things. And what happens is one spouse, usually the wife, but it goes the other way around often, but statistically it's usually the wife, will become incredibly fearful and frightened, and she will tell anyone that listens, my husband's going to kill me. If I die, he did it. And they really are deadly serious, but the amount of those kinds of fears and threats that actually culminate in a shooting or a stabbing or something equally ugly, thankfully, is infinitesimal. So out of those 7,000 orders of protection, I promise you that probably maybe 300 of them involve what I would consider a significant beating or worse. So,
are we talking just law enforcement? So you
no,
personally?
That's generally.
No, I really just want to focus on law enforcement. So when you were an officer, how many protective orders did you file against an officer?
Well, I don't file them. They're filed by the wives, but I've served probably 100 cops.
100 cops, because that's also a problem. Because most of the court systems won't allow a protective order against a cop because he loses his badge. And I know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So
I'm shocked that
in 12 years you actually got 100 of them out there.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, no, I also, you know, because you raised an interesting issue, there was a time that you could be served an order of protection and nobody bothered to take your gun from you. And, you know, particularly cops, it just wasn't done. But eventually some great brain decided that they need to take the cop's gun, even though they don't take the knives, they don't take the other implements that are just as deadly. And so the cop is left without his job. And so when they changed that, the amount of orders of protection that I served on cops diminished conspicuously. For that reason. So the idea of disarming the cop from his firearm, I think so many people think that, my God, you take the firearm away, the cop doesn't have, or the offender doesn't have a way to commit homicide, and that is pure baloney. Please, because one thing we know for sure, and that is that men physically are larger, they're stronger, but women, of course, can be sneaky. I mean, I can tell you about the homicides where police officers' wives have killed them with their own gun.
Know that as well.
You know, I mean, I remember picking up Leroy Bailey, a policeman for a long time, and he was the son of a bitch. He was not a good guy. He was pretty nasty to his wife, and one day he said his last words, "Get me a beer, bitch."
Wow.
And she brought him a big pot of boiling water and threw it on him, and he lingered in the hospital burn unit for days. And then I had to deliver him from the Cook County Hospital. I was working a wagon to the Cook County Morgue. And
mm-hmm.
and so many other officers have been killed by their wives, stabbed, shot, whatnot. But this idea of taking the cop's gun and livelihood away the moment that his wife makes an accusation is really a bad idea because, number one, you're not solving the problem. The violence is still there. The ability to kill is still there. So what you really want to do is you want to keep them employed. And then also, and that's a good thing to bring up, also, we all understand that the wife has to have a roof over her head, and she has to feed her children, and she needs that paycheck. So if she knows that by reporting her husband for domestic violence that he's going to immediately be disarmed and unemployed, it's going to make her reluctant. She just wants help for the family. She doesn't want to see him lose his job. She wants to see him get help.
Exactly.
She wants the fear to end. And that's something else that sometimes the fear, because of aggressive things that people say, and I'm not talking about just cops, everyone says, "I'll kill you." Boy, those words come out of people's mouths so easily. I mean, I would never dream to say that to anyone, let alone a spouse. And I've never said that to a spouse or a girlfriend. God, it would never enter my mind. How horrible. But, to say something that serious, unfortunately, we live in a society where those horrible words flow too easily from people's mouths. And it's a cultural thing. Maybe we've got to learn how to stop. This is not Saudi Arabia where people get to stone their wives. We have to learn that we have to behave ourselves, control our mouths, and it really begins in the beginning in our very culture. And that is that we have to respect our spouses no matter how bad they piss us off. And the other thing that we want to do is we want to try not to piss off our spouses.
Mm-hmm.
By the time that we figure out what happens, the marriage is totally dead, or maybe a spouse is dead, or two spouses. And
right.
We really have to nip this in the bud early. Early intervention, and early intervention that is not heavy-handed to destroy a career.
So, and my question is, Paul,
yeah.
how... I mean, where this is almost like the chicken and the egg. I mean, where do we start? We've obviously have a problem, okay? And,
well,
excuse me.
What we have to do, it begins with mom and dad. It begins with mom and dad and what they pass on to their children. And I promise you, a child who was raised in a chaotic family where mom and dad screams at everybody's screaming in the house, these marriages that the kids will be involved in will wind up emulating what they learned as children. And what we have to do is we have to learn not to hurt the one we love, and we have to learn that our best friend in life, the one that we have to count on, should be our spouse. And by God, I'm proud of one thing. You know, I've dated a lot of women. And the women that I have dated, there is not one that would ever say anything bad about me, and I don't have anything bad to say about them, including my wife. I mean, she did have a temper, but I don't know that it was something that she had total control over. And as you know, women suffer, and so do men, from chemical issues. PMS, things like that, and but it really has to begin. You have to behave yourself in front of your children. You have to teach your children that we do not yell at each other in this house. You know, I might yell at my child to get away from the swimming pool or get away from the stairs because I'm afraid that that child will fall down. But I'm not going to yell at my child for something that maybe they did wrong. I'm going to have to sit down, look him in the eye, and say you have to prepare this. You know, and the other thing, becoming a cop, I would never let my kid ever, if I had, I don't have any children, but if I had a child, God forbid that they would become a cop. I would fight that so hard because mm-hmm. it's an invitation to a disaster, one way
right.
or another. Either you're going to wreck your life or somebody will kill you or somebody will frame you that wants because you arrested them. They'll get your badge because they have political clout. The biggest shame in my own life, and it is a shame, I was raised by a single welfare mom who was a disaster. We would get evicted. I went to 13 different grammar schools simply because we always were in a new neighborhood. My mother was a mess. But I had some incredible intelligence, and I should have gone to medical school. But I didn't really have the funding for it. At least I thought I didn't. I wasn't smart enough to figure out that maybe I could have done it. And if you can avoid being a policeman, that's 100% of it. And women, I would also tell them, but there are good cops that can cope. There's a lot of them. And I don't know if I would have made a whole career without winding up deeply damaged, but some of the things that I did as a private investigator that I had to do the duties weren't really any different. They involved all the same kind of violence and stupidity that I've had to face. Seeing people wrongfully convicted of murder and put on death row, I'm tortured by a case I've been involved in for 24 years where a woman was wrongfully put on death row in Arizona. I write about her on my blog, Crime, Guns, and Videotape. And I've written about her today again. And as I pass the prison, when I leave and travel back and forth to Arizona, I have to pass her prison. I always get an upset stomach thinking about what this poor woman has been put through, all the degrading strip searches, thousands of horrible, horrible meals, and a total loss of her life and privacy, and they're still trying to kill her. How do you deal with that emotionally? And the difference is, I guess I could go get therapy, but I like to think that I've found enough methods of my own that I keep myself together. But it's always going to be a problem. And if I went to medical school, I could be doing breast augmentation surgery in Beverly Hills for cash up front.
There
you
go.
What a better life. But anyway, I don't see any easy solutions, but we have to begin, if we're going to begin anywhere, we have to begin with what we demonstrate in front of our own children.
Okay, but we're already past that because our kids are already hurt. So what do we do for the hurting cops now and the kids and the wives that can't get out of the bad situation they're in?
We put our arms around them. We put our arms around them, and we tell them, we know that you're hurting, and we're on your side. Mm-hmm. Instead of taking, and for the wives that are battered, and I know a lot of them have tried everything, but a lot of them have not gone to say, to put their arms around their husband, to tell them, listen, I know it's miserable. Our lives have been pretty miserable because of what you're going through. I'm on your side.
Okay, Paul, but sometimes that doesn't work. Wait, Paul. I was that wife, and I was that wife that did that, okay?
No,
I know, but so we can go both ways. That's why I really want to come up with a solution that both you as an ex-cop, if you want to be involved, and me as an ex-wife, to really see what we can do, because I was that wife that tried to give him everything
he
needed. So,
but more than being the wife, when I have my fellow officers, and I know they're going through grief and aggravation, like what we've been talking about, I put my arm around them and tell them I'm on their side. And not being the spouse, maybe that's better. But we have to really show people that we care. If we don't and can't show people that we care, then we will never, ever, ever solve this problem. And I have to tell you, every case, and by God, I've seen so much domestic violence over the 42 years, so much of it. Every case is a little different, and the triggers are all a little different. And we do try to generalize because we're looking for common themes, and there are common themes. But what works here doesn't necessarily work somewhere else in another relationship.
That's very, very true.
We are all different, and we somehow have to exist. But everything begins with respect, and everything begins with kindness, and we have to be kind to each other. And unfortunately, we are not. And when a man pisses off his wife, it's hard for her to recover. It's impossible sometimes.
It is, and we are out of time. So real quick, Paul, I want you to give our audience where they can reach you, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today. So if you could just tell our audience where they can reach you at.
Okay, they can go to my ultra-conservative blog at www.crimefilenews.com, and then I have an email address of House Dick, like it's in House Detective, HOUSEDICK at gmail.com. And my name is spelled Hubel, HUEBL.
Great. Thank you so much, Paul. Yes, and I did. Look.
Don't worry about it.
I know, next time. I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to thank everybody. I'm going to have a couple other things after we end the show today, so if you want to stay on to listen, that would be great. But, Paul, thank you so much for joining us on our first show, because the law enforcement officer involved domestic sexual abuse is my business. It's not personal. And being Italian, we're going to raise the volume and promote education. This last song that I'm going to play, I know that it is a song that I sing to all the wives out there. And I know that it was one that God sang to me. So I want you guys to sit back, because Paul's right. You're not alone, and you can reach out, because there are people that care. You are not lost.
Can't believe it's over, I watched the whole thing fall, and I never saw the writing that was on the wall. If I'd only knew the days were slipping past, that the good things never last, that you were crying. Summer turned to winter, and the snow it turned to rain, then the rain turned into tears upon your face. I hardly recognize the girl you are today, and God, I hope it's not too late. It's not too late, 'cause you are not alone. I'm always there with you, and we'll get lost together till the light comes pouring through. 'Cause when you feel like you're done and the darkness has won, and babe, you're not alone. When your world's crashing down and you can't bear the thought, baby, you're not lost. Life can show no mercy. It can tear your soul apart. It can make you feel like you're gone crazy, but you're not. Some things have seemed to change. There's one thing that's still the same. In my heart you have remained. And we can fly, fly, fly away. 'Cause you are not alone, and I am there with you. And we'll get lost together until the light comes pouring through. 'Cause when you feel like you're done and the darkness has won, babe, you're not lost. And the world's crashing down, and you can't bear the cross. I said, baby, you're not lost. Yeah. I said, baby, you're not. Baby, you're not lost. Ooh, yeah, yeah. I said, baby, you're not lost.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Soul Sister Radio.
The Braham tragedy is something that is close to me. Today we just did our first show, and now I'm recording live after the show. It's kind of disjointed because I'm truly trying to walk through this for the first time. And raising the volume and speaking out and promoting education on law enforcement officer-involved domestic sexual abuse is something that you don't wake up one morning saying that you want to do it for a living or that you even want to do it at all. God kind of has you walking in a path, and sometimes we go through some pretty horrific things in life. And when those horrific things are happening, I remember I was saying to God, you better have a really good reason why all this is happening. And sure enough, he was good on his promise. And today we're launching BRAME.biz, and that is all about raising awareness and promoting education. So our mission is to raise awareness, promote education, and seek justice by working with federal, state, and local officials, bringing about change with regards to law enforcement, officer-involved domestic sexual abuse, while assisting with the restoration of those affected by abuse at the hands of those sworn to protect and to serve. Again, today, our first show, I had ex-Chicago police officer on, and I let him talk most of the time, just so I could get his perspective on just what it was like for him being a cop. And he said some pretty interesting things as I remained silent. And as you know, silence is deadly. So as we walk this path and we learn how to raise the awareness, first I want to say thank you to Susan Murphy Milano, my dear, beautiful friend. You've passed, and I know that you're watching and you're smiling down from heaven, because no, I may not know what I'm doing, but you are encouraging me to fly and soar and start to do what it is I'm called to do. And even though this jaw is killing me, and the more I talk, the more it's hurting, the more I know and I can feel your light shining really bright. So I will just want to thank you. I let him speak, by the way. And I really am excited that I met Paul, and that I'm hoping that together we'll be able to change something when it comes to law enforcement officer involved post-traumatic stress disorder, at least. Because it's business, not personal, let me share with you how BRAME.biz was born. After watching the documentary Searching for Angela Shelton, I went home and I Googled my legal last name, which is BRAME, which is spelt Bravo, Romeo, Alpha, Michael, Echo. What I found was no coincidence. Me and this woman and this man once shared a name and a story that was very similar. And however, my voice made it through while theirs was silenced forever. Officer, actually Chief of Police of Tacoma, Washington, David BRAME, took his life and the life of his wife, or soon-to-be ex-wife, because she had filed for divorce. And that was in April of 2003. Having been married to two law enforcement officers, my perspective is really unique, as I continue to hold the utmost respect for those in uniform. For those who have survived and are strong enough to overcome, it's not about how we died that will be remembered, but how we chose to live. And it's not about our story individually, but it's what we do because of the story, because of the path that we've walked. I want to say, may God continue to bless and protect and strengthen all of us who have the courage to speak out, to open our mouth, to open these jaws, and to really bite down hard on making sure that we raise this awareness and promote the education and bring peace into the lives of those still suffering in silence. It's not okay. It's just not okay. I hope to make my voice heard. And yes, I'll stumble and I'll fall, but that's okay. We have children out there that want to just bring peace in the lives of their daddies and their mommies, because this isn't just about officers in the male. It's about officers in the female as well. I'm going to go ahead and play a couple of the songs that I did not get the chance to play earlier today. One of the songs that I'm going to play is Angels Among Us by Alabama. And I'm going to play that now, because I truly, truly know that officers I know that they don't, most of them don't wake up one day and just say, I'm going to be a cop. It truly is a ministry. And blessed are those who are called to serve in this capacity, because you are truly angels of God. And so there are angels among us. And this truly is the reason why I want to raise awareness and promote education on this issue. Why? We've got a lot of how to deal with post-traumatic stress disorder that don't know how to leave it at home or at the door before they get into their home. They don't. We need to admit it. We need to come to grips with the fact that this is true, that cops are killing their wives, their kids, and themselves, and we've got to stop it. Why? Because there truly are angels among us, and we all have to elevate and empower each other to really make sure that those wings are clean and they are ready to soar. So sit back and listen to Angels Among Us.
I was walking home from school on a cold winter day. Took a shortcut through the woods, and I lost my way. It was getting late, and I was scared and alone. But then a kind old man took my hand and led me home. My mama couldn't see him, oh, but he was standing there, and I knew in my heart he was the answer to my prayers. Oh, I believe there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come to you and me in our darkest hours, to show us how to live, to teach us how to give, to guide us with the light of love. When life held troubled times and had me down on my knees, there's always been someone to come along and comfort me. A kind word from a stranger to lend a helping hand. A phone call from a friend just to say I understand. But ain't it kind of funny, at the dark end of the road, that someone lights the way with just a single ray of hope? Oh, I believe there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come to you and me in our darkest hours to show us how to live, just how to give, to guide us with the light of love. They wear so many faces, show up in the strangest places, to grace us with their mercy in our time of need. Oh, from somewhere up above, they come to you and me in our darkest hours, to show us how to live, to teach us how to give, to guide us with the light of love, to guide us with the light of
You know, being married to law enforcement, it's a different way of life. And I was talking to another ex-wife the other day who was married a lot longer than I was. I was married in law enforcement for 20 years. And you truly live and grow up in a bubble. I was introduced to that lifestyle at 18 years old when I met both of my husbands on the same day. And it's you are not part of the real world anymore. You don't do normal things, really. Most of your life is focused and geared on law enforcement. All your friends are law enforcement. I have to tell you, the more I do this show, the more my jaw is off. So if my words come out funny, know that it's my jaw that's not working. So forgive me. But one of the biggest goals that I have for this new show, for this outreach, is to, like I said, really raise awareness and promote education on this issue of law enforcement officer involved domestic sexual abuse. Not to point fingers and say, you've got a problem and you've got a problem to individual people. No, this is truly to bring the law enforcement community together, because I have a daughter who has a daddy who's a cop, actually a retired cop now. And we've got an issue, and we want to make sure that our families stay together and our kids are safe. And one of the goals that I've had in this dream box of mine with BRAME written on it is called Safety in ADO Home. And real quick, I want to send out really great wishes and hellos to some incredible women who run two sites on Facebook. You can find them there. One is called Wives Behind the Badge, and the other is called The Police Wife Life. And I truly want you to go ahead and find them on Facebook. These are women that are amazing, women strong, that are married to cops, that truly love the lifestyle, and I understand it completely, and want only good for their husbands and for their families. And truly, it's a camaraderie that I miss at times. However, in my particular case, it came at a very high price. So I want to say hello to those two organizations that are truly stepping up and bringing awareness to the need of having a safe place for these wives to go to and just, you know, hang out and know that it's a totally different way of life. And when you're out of it, there's nothing for us, really, because we're not ex-wives of normal people. No, we're ex-wives of cops. So I don't know if we should have our own entity, but really I don't think so, because most of us have children. So we're still somewhat in that law enforcement family, and really want to, most of us want to raise awareness on this because of our children, which brings me to my beautiful daughter. Lauren, I want you to know that I love you so much, and that you know better than anyone how I feel about your daddy. And I pray that he finds peace and about causing any blame for him or for now your ex-stepfather, who is your other issue in my life that we will talk about when it comes to this topic. And again, my story is kind of crazy, but Lauren, your support of this and knowing that this is about getting that help that so many officers need, that anger management classes that I believe you were right in saying that it was something that you believe that all officers need to have, just simply because anger management and being a cop, they go hand in hand, or at least they should. I want to actually dedicate this whole entire ministry to my ex-husband and know that without you, this show wouldn't be happening. And that I wish you nothing but the best, your story in of itself and the reasons why life has turned out the way that it has is an interesting story in of itself. And again, I am making it all public and all knowing, and I will try to keep things as respectful as I possibly can, knowing that you are all listening. But my name is Brame, and there's $187 million with my name written on it to educate law enforcement on how to deal with domestic violence when it comes to their own employees. So it's my goal to make sure we get those tools into our officers' hands and make these departments accountable for making sure that our officers have a safe place to go where they're not afraid that they're going to lose their job because they're dealing with post-traumatic stress. Why? Just because they're putting armor on every day. When you have to sit there and watch your husband go to the closet and put on a bulletproof vest and then put on 40 pounds of armor every morning before he goes to work, you understand that these guys are truly on the battlefield every day. And anybody who wants to criticize what they do for a living, step aside until you've walked in their shoes. You have no idea. And as a wife of one of those officers, I give you blessing and prayer every day because, wow, to watch your husband put on his armor knowing that he will may not come home tonight is something that we deal with every day. It's something that we think about maybe a fraction of a second every day, but it is a thought that goes on in our mind, but we keep going. Why? Because our kids are watching. Why? I witnessed so many children witness them at their father's funerals, of the fathers that didn't come home because they were chasing a drunk driver down Highway 74 on an April night. And wow, that night, 2 5-year-old twin girls lost their daddy, and a wife who loved her husband and they had an incredible relationship, this officer and his wife. She lost her best friend. It was the saddest thing to witness because even at that time, I was thinking to myself, there's got to be a better way. Officers have got to be able to have a better way to take all this sorrow that they see out on the road every day and have a safe place that they can talk about it because it's not safe. I'm telling you straight up, the minute they go to their supervisors and say that they have an issue, that's it. It's death to them and their career. So I want you all to know, those angels among us, that my voice is being raised. And for you, my ex-husband, it's being raised for you the most, because I know that I know that I know all the things that happened. I don't excuse, but I know the reasons why they happened. And God has given me a very good perspective and has given me a very good voice to be able to use to teach and to raise awareness. I've been left with some really great tools by Susan Murphy Milano. And we have other organizations out there that we are partnering up right now to make sure that we have the right tools in place so women have a safe place to go and officers have a safe outlet to go to where they know they're not going to be in a death spiral downward when it comes to their career. So that is our goal here on Brame.biz on Soul Sister Radio. And I just wanted to thank you all for joining us today. I'm going to end with a couple more songs and then with our ending Soul Sister Radio song. Again, I want to thank you all for joining us. I want to thank those who listen in the archive. Again, it's probably a disjointed radio show today, but I'm learning and I'm walking as I'm going and becoming a new creation. And that's what this show is all about. And today was my first step. Pray for all those out there for strength and for the courage to step up and be able to speak out. Starting in a couple weeks, we are going to air our first show with Brame.biz on Wednesdays, and that is going to be called Her Name is Crystal. Why? Because my name is Brame, and that whole story we're going to talk about, and it's a pretty passionate topic for me. Crystal Judson was the wife of David Brame. However, she died trying to change her name for all eternity. And instead, it was her mom and dad that had to make sure that her name was changed back to the original, and that is what's resting on her tombstone. So Crystal Judson, Her Name is Crystal, that show will be for you. You truly are, and I agree with your father, I am not you. I did not die. My story doesn't end with that tragic ending. But my name is Brame, and I am going to speak up, because everything Lane Judson does to try to get women out of the bad situations his daughter found himself in, I am the walking, breathing testimony that it can happen. And my name is Brame. What am I going to do about it now? I'm going to raise awareness and promote education, making sure that our children have parents that can communicate, that live in peace, harmony, and that can continue to protect and serve, because that is the ministry God has called us to do. So thank you so much. And you, my ex-husband, God bless you forever. And to my daughter, I love you. And this song is for you. Or I should say this show is for you. Why? Because there's a lot of children out there that are suffering in silence, and all they want is for their parents to have anger management classes so peace can be their way. So thank you so much for joining us today. I would like to end with a song that I played at the last part of the show today. And I really want to sing this to the ladies out there that are married to law enforcement, and to know that you're not lost, that there are people that understand. His Father up in heaven, our Savior Jesus Christ, my God on a Harley, Joe, he knows. And you are definitely not alone.
Can't believe it's over, I'll watch the whole thing fall. And I never saw the writing that was on the wall. If I'd only knew the days were slipping past, that the good things never last, that you were crying. Summer turned to winter, and the snow it turned to rain. Then the rain turned into tears upon your face. I hardly recognize the girl you are today. God, I hope it's not too late. It's not too late. 'Cause you are not alone. I'm always there with you. And we'll get lost together till the light comes pouring through. 'Cause when you feel like you're done and the the darkness has won. Babe, you're not lost. When your world crashes down and you can't bear the thought, said, babe, you're not lost. Life can show no mercy, it can tear your soul apart. It can make you feel like you're gone crazy, but you're not. Some things have seemed to change, there's one thing that's still the same. In my heart you have remained, and we can fly. Darkness has won, babe, you're not lost. And the world's crashing down, and you can't bear the cross. I said, baby, you're not lost. Yeah. I said, baby, you're not. Baby, you're not lost. Ooh, yeah, yeah. I said, baby, you're not lost.
Hey, 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 hey. You're leaving. Get you.
Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Soul Sister Radio.